Welcome to The Graveyard Shift, the podcast where anything goes, as long as there's a good story to tell. Join Todd, Matt, Jimmy, and Gary as they bust myths and share advice that hopefully isn't terrible. Let's dive in.
Well, welcome to The Graveyard Shift. Today's topic, succession planning. And we're going to be talking about creating a plan and having a smooth transition. But today, gratefully and thankfully, it won't be just the four of us talking. We've got some special guests here with us today. We've got Chris Krueger, CEO of Foresight Companies, and Jake Johnson, President and CEO of Johnson Consulting Group. And gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Todd.
Hey, but before we get going on succession planning, we actually had some listener feedback that was submitted via email. And
I might be worried about this. Yeah. You guys are.
So, Jimmy, you actually got a shout out from a listener on the episode about natural organic reduction on the shift. And the listener wrote, "Hey, remind Jimmy to blow on the wine in his coffee cup to make it look hot."
Bust it. Maintain the illusion.
And then he followed that up.
That was your takeaway from that episode.
That was the takeaway. Good. Yeah.
Why are your teeth red?
All right. So, but the listener did add, "Great podcast. Keep it going." So we'll take that as our morning inspiration. So let's get started. So Chris, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Todd. Again, Chris Krueger at the Foresight Companies. Foresight, we're a 38-year-old company, consulting company focused on the funeral and cemetery profession. I've really modeled it after a boutique investment bank. So we do work with people in an advisory capacity, but it's really what we help people is in their succession planning, buying and selling businesses, funeral homes and cemeteries.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And I got my awesome in pretty early this time, Matt.
Yeah, so, that's awesome. Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, Jake, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yep. Jake Johnson, so Johnson Consulting Group. Very similar story, helping people buy and sell businesses. And we also have constructed a back office for helping people run them as well. So it's been a lot of fun. All I know is the funeral business, so here I am.
All right. Well, thanks for being here.
So you guys are not fluid salesmen?
I think I missed that
training.
So
before we started recording,
that's part-time.
Invest everything in Bitcoin. I think this funeral thing is a scam.
I was hoping that they were M&A and self-storage units and car washes. I was trying to try something different. But that's fine. This will be interesting.
Before we get started, I want to say thank you both. You both worked with my family and family-owned funeral homes. You guys are great for this profession. So thank you both.
It was a pleasure. We enjoyed working with your father more than you.
But I get that a lot.
Yeah, it was kind of sad to see that.
Thank you, Jim.
God rest his soul. Just kidding, guys. Well, you don't know when it's going to air.
Sorry, I had to find out this way.
My office will be cleared out by the time I get home.
That's again. All right, well, let's get going here. So, Chris, why don't you start us off here by talking a little bit about the NFDA survey that you work with the National Funeral Directors Association on. And the study that you commissioned in 2023, what are some things that funeral directors ought to know about succession planning?
Yeah, I think it's a great topic. We've actually, Jake and I have talked about this recently at a conference on Saturday, but it's a study that was done by the NFDA in 2023. It's the third time they've done this study. It's about succession planning. And it's really kind of the state of succession planning in funeral service right now. So this is a couple-year-old information. But I mean, I'll just throw this out to the group. What percentage of owners today do you think know the value of their business?
The ones that just sold?
that's the most accurate answer I've ever heard, right?
The ones who have not been able to sell?
That's what it's not worth.
10 to 15, something like
10
that?
10 to 15?
Yeah, I would guess really low, I would think, because they had talked to an accountant that tells them their land is worth $2 million.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so the reality of it is that if you ask the funeral director, it's 53%. And what's terrifying about that is that you've got over 46% of owners are looking to transition their business over a 5-year period. So you've got about, you know, just barely a half that think they know the value of the business, whether they do or not. Yeah. And we certainly know that.
Right.
But you got about half of the profession looking to transition in some capacity. Now, half of those want to transition to a family member or an employee. Yeah. Not that the family member or employee really knows about it, but, you know, so there's different things that are going into this, but it's, you know, and then we're dealing with a scenario where less than a quarter of them, actually 24%, have a succession plan. So you've got this massive tidal wave of ownership transfer. You got a lot of people who don't frankly even know the value of their business, and they're not prepared. And that's kind of the state of where we're at right now. And that is a couple-year-old information. I mean, Jake, I don't know what you, if you want to say, I mean, what you're seeing a couple years into this.
Right. Well, it's you're seeing it right now. You know, it's during COVID, there was a lot of activity. And as we're coming out of it, you know, there's more that we're getting the calls, you're getting the calls.
Yeah.
You know, they want to do something, they need to do something. And when we were doing, you and I, Chris, were at a conference on Saturday, and we were talking about, you know, the preparedness of these individuals, and I likened it to like a frustration of why people don't pre-plan, you know, pre-need, and what it, so which would go along with this podcast. So the first question was how many, you know, 100% of the people are likely to die in their lifetime or something like that.
What?
I think it's a Yogi Berra thing. Yeah, and so you know you're going to die, but you don't pre-plan. Why is that? You know, and so I think the same thing goes with succession planning. It just kind of gets sidelined, and then it finally comes to a point to do something, and the preparedness, you know, you just kind of take what you get at that point.
Yeah.
We don't plan to fail, but we fail to plan.
Right.
Yeah, we fail to plan. Ooh. I mean, here
wow,
we
that
are.
That sounded really good.
Here's something I could write with.
Wow. Yeah, right here.
We all know you can't.
Pretty prophetic.
Pencil.
So one thing that I was just kind of curious, I think our listeners would be curious too, was what in your opinion, Jake, is driving the increase in ownership transfer right now? So you mentioned COVID as a backdrop, but what else is?
If COVID, you're seeing the rising labor costs and inability to find good people, which I think, you know, I'm of the opinion that that's kind of somewhat self-created by how you know, what you're willing to pay. Mm-hmm. And then you can complain that you can't find people. Maybe that you have to look inward sometimes, but
culture,
right? So having that ability to find people, you know, the profession continues to change.
And Jake's spot on. You know, you look at, it's a very aged demographic in ownership today. And there's a lot of headwinds, right? You got everything from cremation to staffing to the just general cost of operating a business. And it isn't easy. Right. And as people are getting older and making those changes and jumping into technology, is that much more difficult. Right. And so, I mean, in order to be competitive and to succeed and thrive in this profession, you have to be a little bit more progressive. And if you're not, you're going to get eaten alone. And so what I think is, you know, you got an average ownership that's close, you know, to 70 years old, a lot of which who want to transfer. And they're just saying, I just don't need this right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and that, I mean, and we've seen that in our numbers, not only the number of people that are calling and are, you know, saying it's time or I need to do something, but it's the difference is they're a lot more committed to it. They're serious. It's time now. It's not about, I want to talk about this. It's let's get going.
Yeah.
I have a question. So you guys, you do this professionally. Every once in a while, as a small funeral home owner, you have people to approach you. It's not my bailiwick to do a full evaluation, but how many of those folks wanting and willing to sell, the price they have in their head is such an emotionally elevated number, or is that a thing?
Oh, yeah.
It's a great question. I mean, emotion is very real in this whole equation. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jake,
yep.
You want to...
Right. And we were doing, Chris and I were doing a study together on just the value of a business. Let's say the business is $2 million, is the example we used. And the ownership...
I'll sell now.
I'll be a buyer.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. I'll take it.
And in a business of that value, it's possible that the owners, maybe with perks making $200,000, yeah. $250,000, they sell that business, pay taxes, pay debt. They're not going to have that kind of income, and so they can be stuck.
Yeah,
you know, it really speaks to how do we re-examine our relationships with our competition and maybe work together and kind of create some capacity that way. And you know, I think ignorance was bliss back in the days before social media and internet, and now you kind of know it's available. And
right.
I mean, heck, baristas make $45,000 or whatever that is, and you know, so what's asked of us as funeral professionals is you look at that, and what else is out there? You start questioning, what do I want to do, you know, as owners? So,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, Gary, you've been on the acquiring side of a couple locations with the firms that you operate.
You were here.
Yeah.
Hello, Gary.
That's why, yeah, I'm just being kind of moving in.
Wow, I'm seeing flower in the background.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you've seen when it comes to the reasons the people that you've worked with have decided to sell their businesses?
I think there are a variety of different reasons. I think the business is getting more complicated, more complex. I've said this a couple times on the podcast, but if you were working in a Catholic neighborhood in Cincinnati 25 years ago, every funeral is almost exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And now it's more humanist. It's more customized per person. Mm-hmm. And frankly, what I've seen at least in a third of them is just complete burnout. just, yeah. I can't keep getting up in the middle of the night. I can't deal with the stress. I just want out.
People are tired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's understandable, especially if they're doing everything.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things that the larger firms have taken a little bit of the pressure off funeral directors by bifurcating the job description into the back office or front office, making it a little bit easier to specialize and do the things that you're good at and stay away from the things that you're not good at. It's hard to do in a two-person firm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think the other thing that maybe drove it coming out of COVID is you had a surge in deaths, and therefore the businesses were worth more, or at least in theory were worth more coming out of that. Now, the last two or three years, you've seen the reverse happen, with case volumes being a little down. So,
and that's when people really feel that pain too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because everybody came off that high of thinking things were wonderful, call volumes were up, revenues were up, cash flow was great. And then you've seen that pullback, and all of a sudden it's holy moly, right? What's, you know, hold on for dear life.
COVID recoil.
Yeah.
Well, then you had the others that were, some were getting out because it was too busy and they just couldn't handle, they're like, I can't do this. You know, somebody else handle this volume, my people, I can't find people, what have you. What's interesting is the, if you take like the births from whatever, 85 years ago, and map that out. First, you see like at 2013, the births versus deaths change. So you have more deaths than births going forward.
Yep.
And then you see this COVID mound, if you will, of deaths. And then I think it's whatever the projection is. You know, if you project a death at 85 years and add that to births 85 years
ago, the baby boomers,
you see this mountain coming in 2030.
You got a silver tsunami right behind.
It's insane.
This.
Yeah, and it dwarfs the COVID mound, and you just kind of wonder who's going to be up to that challenge and who is not.
Right.
Who is not.
Right.
Yeah, so Chris, I have a question for you. So let's talk a little bit about what's at stake.
Okay.
Either whether it's what's at stake if we plan well, and what's at stake if we don't plan well.
Quite a bit. You know, I would say in a very general answer, I think the difference between pre-planning and planning your exit versus not could be 20% or more in value. But even more importantly, I think it's taking a little bit of time to really map out that succession plan gives you all the flexibility in the world of who that successor is going to be. Right? So not only is there a big piece of that is value, but I think what you'll see, and this goes back to that study that the NFDA conducted in 2023, which is only 13% of sellers is money the most important thing. It's about taking care of the community. It's about legacy. And if you plan, you have a lot more flexibility in determining who that successor is going to be. And you can position the business far better for success in the future. Right. So, I mean, it means a lot.
Yeah. So, Jake, what would you add to that?
No, it's right on. I think the planning is very important. If you're not going to be planning, then you're kind of the nice part. It's kind of that ignorance is bliss. You just kind of get what you're going to get. You know,
what's the runway on that? What do you guys recommend? Like, how far out should
30 days?
For you, Jimmy, I'm not sure there's an amount of time.
For you, it was last month. Yeah. Don't look at my financials.
No, I'm in for $2 million. I got it. He's got succession covered here.
$2 million. I'm in.
Different ways from Fort Worth to Houston.
One thing I would say is that succession planning is, I mean, we talk about it for business owners, but I think when you start your career, you should be doing succession planning. You should have a vision of where you want to go, right?
That's good.
So, you know, when you get into a business ownership, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you
know, well, a great follow-up question, Jake, might be this one then. If, you know, we have a lot of our listeners who are funeral professionals, not
three,
funeral home
three,
owners.
Three listeners.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot.
A great follow-up, if I may say so myself.
Next time, pat me on the back while you say that.
If you thought that was good, wait to hear this question.
Yeah, I haven't even said the question yet. Just wait. So, all right. So, but you know, if I'm not an owner now, but I might want to be one in the future, what kind of things should I be thinking about?
Yeah. Well, first, I'm going to start off with what your skill sets are. You know, because a great funeral director isn't necessarily a great manager, and a great manager isn't necessarily a great owner, but it can be fixed and improved, and you know, and so. I think it's first about acknowledging what your weaknesses are, figuring out what it is you need to improve, and then seeking help. I mean, the nice part about today is there's help everywhere for this. So you're really, you know, it would be your own fault if you didn't improve upon yourself. And there's always room for improvement. You know, the day you think you know everything, that's the minute or the day that you really got a problem.
Yeah, so, amen to that.
What would you add to that, Chris?
I would say, number one, good credit. Make sure that you pay attention to that, save some money, and be a sponge. And to Jake's point about understanding what you're good at is keep your eyes and ears open and try to look at some people around you who could be mentors and be people that you want to model yourself after, owners. Ask a lot of questions. And then I would say then you morph into what am I really good at and how can I step into an ownership role going forward.
Yeah, so one follow-up from that, not a good one, Matt, but just a follow-up.
A mediocre follow-up.
Mediocre follow-up.
It keeps it flowing.
For new owners, what do you think the biggest surprise is, Chris, as a new owner? What was something that a new owner doesn't expect to experience but they end up experiencing?
Ulcers.
24/7, 365, mm-hmm. which is ulcers, right? It is running a business, your CEO and chief cook and bottle washer also, right? There's a lot that goes into it. And first time, owners, I think a lot of it has to do with the financial requirements, the financial statements, the finances, all the details, the nuances, just the little things. There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, that's kind of the wake up call especially for family transfers. They had a business that didn't have much debt, and so now the son or daughter is taking it over, and they've got debt. And it's just there's some different things you need to look after that.
New accountability.
Yeah, new accountability.
Get a little too close to home now.
So Jake, what's something different about today's buyers than it may be past buyers?
Yeah, I mean, today's buyers are more selective. They're being very careful what they're buying. They're back in the day, for me, in 95, we would look at a business, add 10% to revenue, eliminate some right-size the payroll, and then we'd basically we're buying on our hopes and dreams. And people aren't, they're not doing that so much anymore. So
yeah, they're very purposeful. I mean, mm-hmm. and that's if you look at the people who are more active in the acquisition, field today. It has to fit right with their business, and they're going to pay a fair, reasonable multiple. But the other thing is they're going to do their due diligence, a lot more due diligence today than was ever done before, right? And it's really making sure it's trust but verify. And that's the piece, is there's a lot more that goes into the verifying today. And then for these people, that making sure that this is the right investment for their company. And we've seen a lot of people who've done it well and continued to grow, and then we've seen some others who have floundered a little bit and are, getting their houses in order.
Could you give us three examples of each of those?
At this table?
With their first and last names?
I was about to throw you under the bus, Bailey.
Well, the biggest mistake would have been Mr. Bailey.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Checkmark. No, I will say, like 15 years ago, I say to people, I probably would have bought an outhouse that someone nailed funeral home onto it.
Yeah.
Like it was just like the
mindset.
Did you
put a chandelier in that location?
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice.
Truthfully, people were buying 30, 50, 80 car funeral homes in the mid-90s. I mean, the corporates were. Mm-hmm. And paying relatively premium dollars for these things. So to Jake's point, it was, you needed a willing seller, maybe, because, you could convince them otherwise. But it's just changed. It's a very different dynamic out in the marketplace. People are much more, purposeful. They're much more intelligent. They've seen the mistakes, and, they're doing the best they can to avoid them for the most part.
Yeah. Having 100% market share in a small community that does 30 calls with no chance to grow in a declining burial market.
Mm-hmm. It's tough. It's a challenge.
Definitely.
Yeah, so, and Chris, what, you talk about business valuations, and how often do you think a funeral homeowner should be valuing their business?
Annually. And I would say, and Jake and I have talked about this, is you look at most owners, it's probably 70 to 90% of their net worth is tied up in this business. So when it comes down to knowing what that looks like and having a pretty good feel for what will happen if you need to do something, that to me is something you want to stay on top of. You go back to, and I mentioned we're only 24% of owners have a succession plan. Actually, about the great majority of those are at least 2 years old. So, yeah, it's, you guys work with people all the time, and we do that annually.
Yeah. So, Jake, on the emotional side of selling, we all know stories of the funeral director who was the owner who was like, the only way I'm leaving this building is boots first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what are some of the roadblocks, in your opinion, that prevent funeral homeowners from properly planning their exit and exiting the business before their business is impacted?
Well, I think first of all, they're not getting the valuation done. And the valuation is not just a discovery of what the value is, but it's a discovery of what the value is not. And how do we get there to accomplish whatever that goal is? I think a lot of people set their vision too low, and they hit that goal, and they think they hit a home run. They didn't realize that they really could have something greater if they planned more. And that certainly involves how you position the staff so that when that time comes that you can walk away and the new buyer who's being more, you know, cautious about what they're buying can see that the place can be run while this owner steps aside. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not real difficult if you're planning and reviewing that every year.
It's yes. hard for some people to lay that down though.
It is. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's you're the thing, is your caregivers, everything is about families first, right? Yes. And even if you're starting that discussion, drop everything at a whim, which they should, and we'll just not pick it back up. And you just kind of, life happens, and there's always something that comes up to keep you from doing it.
It's sort of like my grandmother worked every day, Sunday. She'd go in before church, and check in, go to church, and come home. That was her closest half day. But every day, that was her life. And she worked a funeral the day she died. And I think there's a lot of folks out there, that's their identity of who they are.
100%.
When you wonder how much more that's going to be is like real estate, right? Using that $2 million example with the $250,000 compensation, like where's your end? Yep. You know, how are you going to get out of that situation?
Yeah.
Are you just going to ride it till it's over?
They don't want
it. You know?
But how does that help their legacy if they didn't do that? Because they didn't even think about it.
Right.
They didn't think about what happens when they're gone, and all for naught if they didn't get in contact with me.
Well, all of us who have, you know, our fathers and mothers, right? You know, the thing I've learned in my own succession planning was pretty much, my father ended up passing away, God rest his soul, but you know, you think you're going to live forever, right? And we all have kids, and we're going to be the same way, and we're afraid we're going to run out of money. So it's figuring out how to feel the opposite of that and retire successfully and while we're healthy instead of on the front porch of the funeral, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to shift gears a little bit about talking about the future just a little bit. As owners begin to prepare for a succession plan and a transition, one thing that struck me in visiting with both you, Chris, and Jake is the one of the things that I think I overlooked until I had conversations with you about this in preparation, but what is at stake when it comes to having quality staff in place before, as you're considering your succession plan? So Chris, we'll start with you.
It is a big factor, right? About succession, success, about the continuity of a business. If you have good quality people and the business is set up for future success, you're going to maximize your value. If you are in a scenario where you're light on licenses, you can't keep people, number one, it's going to be reflected in your financial performance. But it also, you know, people in doing that due diligence, they're going to discount that, right? Because unfortunately, we all know, right, the good staff, the good operators don't just fall out of trees. And it's not like we can just parachute people in there. So it will impact the valuation or, frankly, even the interest level of buyers quite a bit. We've had a number of different scenarios where buyers just pull out of or just are not interested because they don't have the staff. They don't have operations that can augment these businesses. So staff has a big thing to do with it.
So Jake, what would you add?
Yeah, I mean, labor being 30-40% of the cost in the business, it's a big part of the review. I think the other thing too is that, you consider the average size of a general small business in the U.S. I don't know if it's 500,000 or 600,000, but you have arrangers in your building themselves that are like small businesses within your business. And what's interesting about it is each one of them probably has a different average sale. And sometimes the one with the lower average sale has been there longer, making more money. and then when you take that and then you do like a value multiple to it, you know, some are adding, you know, a couple hundred thousand more in value, and they might even be getting paid less depending on your compensation plan. So it's kind of an interesting study as far as how payroll really affects the valuation and the succession plan.
So
want to interject. So, I mean, like Gary, I mean, I know you guys have done some buying.
Yep.
What do you think about when you're looking at a business and you see when you're looking at people?
Well, we've walked away from a couple deals because we didn't think we could plug somebody in there. The key person was leaving.
Right.
And so it we didn't devalue the deal. It literally killed it.
Right.
We knew we didn't have anybody
Right.
It happened to be an African-American funeral home, and we didn't have a manager that we could put in there that had the experience at the level when we originally looked at it. It definitely is going to affect value. Horan talked about that when he talked about his succession, the fact that it really made it more valuable, the fact that there was a team in place that they could, and Darren now has an even expanded role. He's managing an entire region. So that really is important. The firms we've bought in general have been tiny. There are a whole bunch of very small funeral homes in Cincinnati, very few over doing over 100 calls. And so we've had to customize those deals to try to take advantage of what the owner was willing to do and what they weren't. Like, we had two people that just said, here are the keys. I don't ever want to see this building again. I'm done. One of them was in his early 80s. I don't think he did a lot of pre-planning.
More reason to do your due diligence on that deal.
That takes Harvard courage.
There it is.
There it is.
But the other thing, back to the point earlier, what should a seller be doing? I really think, as you said, funeral directors tend to be caregivers. They don't tend to be sharp finance people. And just going through the exercise of valuing it with somebody like Jake or Chris, you can start looking at what's driving the value of that business, whether it's staff, whether it's growth, whether it's the margins generated. I think for a lot of funeral directors, it would be a good educational exercise to go through that. I mean, we've had multiple people try to sell to us where they want to sell us the business, and then they said, well, you know, you got to pay me for the real estate too.
And, you explain to them, and the pre-deed.
Yeah, it's one or the
other. Sounds like your story, by the way.
We have almost a million in pre-need, Gary.
Gary, we have now got, I think, currently three different clients that the buyers are paying the fee because they just needed us to work with the seller.
To structure
it and understand and organize them and figure out how to get this thing done, because it was like talking to a wall.
And for us, I don't think we've worked directly with you, Chris, but we bought a couple of...
It wasn't you, Matt.
We bought a couple of firms and Jake represented the seller. And it actually gave me a lot of comfort knowing I'm getting accurate information, and it's usually categorized the same way we categorize it, so you can get kind of an apples-to-apples comparison. Yeah. So it actually does help a lot speed the acquisition process.
Yeah,
it certainly speaks to the value of, even before us, just the businesses doing good accounting, a good chart of accounts, really categorizing things well. People get afraid about, you know, they're running their owner-related items in there, which we all do, that's not going to get...
You do?
We can do that?
Well, never mind. No, I do not. No, I do not.
Way to differentiate yourself,
Johnson. For the record.
Hypothetically, how far back
you ran through your business. But yeah, that's just having sloppy financials, is just, I mean, that's what our job can be for our customers. Yeah. Just rebuilding it so you can make heads or tails of it. So
and overcoming that, make no mistake, people get, I mean, there's a lot of ego involved, and people are embarrassed, and often people think that it really is like they're committing some felony by, well, maybe. But even talking about that with people like us or people on our team, they get real sensitive to it, letting people inside the tent, so to speak.
So how do you? This is a question for the whole group, and how do you think people are looking at retirement today than they may have looked at it differently 10 years ago? So Matt, what are your thoughts on the way that retirement itself is changing?
Well, people, I think, are living longer, and I think their health is better. So I think because of that, they either think they have more time to get there. And I think we've seen societies change. I mean, I think years ago, the guy that owned the hardware store thought that his retirement was wrapped up in the value of his business, and he didn't do any preparation. And then Home Depot and Lowe's came to town, and then he was stuck with a lease and nothing. So...
Thank God I own a video store.
I know. Jimmy's got that Blockbuster in Alaska, the last one standing. No, but I think, people, I don't know, I think not everyone doesn't want to work until they die. So, I think there are a lot of folks who are out there who say, maybe I have an exit and I want to be able to have some years of travel and have some years of health and things like that. So what does that look like, and how much money do they need to do that? And if you're... And again, I think it's different parts of the country, the different realities of what people are facing. If you have a one-person show in a county in, rural America doing 55 calls a year, and you're the football coach on the side, and you don't even have an apprentice or someone to hand it off to, like, what does that look like? Yeah. It's scary in a lot of ways, but some of it, people can't be too upset because it's their own protectionism and of licensing and how they operate and how they staff, and they created a perfect storm. I mean, there's a reason why we had cooler trucks in New York during the pandemic leaking in Brooklyn, because our colleagues fought to protect their license on who could do a transfer. And there's a reason why there's no one to sell that funeral home, because they can't find a 31-year-old kid that they paid $22,000 a year to, who now could afford to buy the business and wants to wake up at 2 in the morning to drive 3 hours in a house call.
Could you start over?
Yes.
So what are
thoughts and buzzes, Jim?
Yeah, so Jake, what are your thoughts on the changing retirement landscape?
To me, this profession is incredible. I think about my other friends and their different businesses they're in, and it's not very personal. And so just us here today, and then funeral homes in their communities, it's like a mayoral status. Like, everybody knows each other, and we're going to be around seeing each other for a while, and that's unique. And so along with living longer, I think the definition of what retirement is has changed to where people, they still want to be involved, but they don't want to be involved in the stresses of it. So it's kind of like retiring from stresses, but not from your job, you know, and that's a cool part about this profession, you know, for sure.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say that people want one. They want a retirement. It's about some sort, you know, the quality of well-being and quality of life. That's much more at the forefront of people's thinking. And, you know, with a very aged demographic, I think you got a lot more of these people who are raising their hand and saying, I want something. But then it ties into they're living longer. What's it, you know, am I going to be able to, are my finances going to survive to the very end? So I think it's just there's a lot more awareness, and people are putting a little bit more into quality of life than just, the daily grind.
Awesome. Well, hey, one thing to close out with you. I got a question for both of you, Chris and Jake. We'll start with you, Chris. If you could give one piece of advice question. So if you could give one piece of advice to a business owner when it comes to succession planning, what would that one thing be?
If you don't have a plan, start one. If you're not talking to a colleague, talking to somebody like Jake or myself, our organizations, somebody holding you accountable and starting to document where you want things to go, start it. Do it. You got to. For your survival and for those that you care about.
Mm-hmm. And Jake?
Yeah, I think it's you'd be surprised at what you can accomplish with planning. So it goes back to the planning, but also, you know, there's nothing wrong with setting visions that seem ridiculous. They call them BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals, unlike what maybe Jimmy would define that as. I don't know what that would be.
The A is probably
draw you a picture later. Big, hairy,
whatever. But you'd be surprised, I think, what you can accomplish.
That was his nickname in college.
Yeah. BHAG.
By the way, for the record, Ranger Community College. Yeah.
There you go. Yes. Yeah. So I think setting that vision, gosh, I mean, like I say, like from the moment you start your career to hopefully ownership to the end, you know, set some crazy visions of what you want to do. God forbid you might hit it, actually, you know.
Yeah.
And I would just point in real quick, Todd, too, that if there's a lot of people, ownership is not the goal. Mm-hmm. And that leads to a lot of opportunity as well, though. I mean, if they have leadership skills, they have management skills, and they're working with someone who, as we said, is a great funeral director, but not necessarily a great business operator. I mean, there's real potential and opportunity for those folks to, you know, take advantage of the circumstances we find themselves in. I mean, we see people
leadership.
All the time trying
we need
to,
leadership.
Yeah.
Right people in the right seat.
And we find people all the time, you know, looking for help. And you don't have to just stay in your own neighborhood anymore. I mean, there are opportunities that people probably have across the country just to go and find the firms that are great firms to work for, that take care of their people, that give them opportunities to excel and work hard. So I think there's the circumstances we have, whether it's an ownership path or, you know, being in the trenches working families every day. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity right now for folks young and old.
This episode has been one of my favorites because it speaks to where we are in our profession. You have two guys that have, quote, competing companies, but come together and collaborate for the better of our profession. Yeah. So thank you both very much.
Absolutely.
I mean, because that's pretty cool.
It is.
You
it
look
is
back
cool.
20, 30 years, and it was like, I'm not going to talk to that funeral director down the street. And now, you know, we have, you know, leaders in our profession that are, we ask, help for and advice from, and they're collaborating, having conversations with another, and yeah, it's awesome.
I would say you're among the first best and second best at what you do.
You decide.
We're going to ask for the pano shot here, and you're going to settle up by leg wrestling on the floor right here.
Click the link below. That's not fair.
Click the link below to vote.
Well, hey, unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time together. So I just want to really thank you, Chris and Jake, for joining us today on the Graveyard Shift, and love to see you on the floor at NFDA later. And we're looking forward to that. So again, to our listeners, to all the funeral professionals out there, thank you for listening to this podcast. And if you have some feedback, you know, email that over to thegraveyardshift@passari.com. That is thegraveyardshift@passari.com. Give us your thoughts, your questions, and your opinions. And if you'd like us to explore some topics in the future, let us know what those would be. And as always, our call to action here is to put something that you learned today in use. Mm-hmm. I think the lesson here is start your plan now. It's never too late to start. And second, I just ask you not to keep this podcast a secret. We are here to help the funeral profession grow and prosper, and we hope we're doing a small part in that. So with that, so long, and we'll all visit again soon.